Hello, everyone. This is Steve with the Flying Clubs team, and I'm joined by my colleague, Drew.
Hey, folks. This is Drew here. Welcome to episode 3 of Flying Clubs Radio. This episode's topic is a hot one, insurance woes, and I'll be asking Steve about some of the work he's been doing on the topic of Flying Club insurance.
Yeah, that's right. We've been getting a lot of emails from clubs about the increasing costs of insurance, and my own club has experienced this as well.
So, Steve, we've been hearing of premium increases of 25 to 30%. Do you have any idea what's causing that?
Yeah, we have an inkling. In fact, Tom Haynes, AOPA Senior VP of the Media Group, wrote an article on this recently, actually January the 23rd. It's on our website. It's titled, Why Insurance Rates Are Increasing 10 to 100%. This was also featured on AOPA Live a few weeks back. It makes some really interesting reading and listening and gives some background as to why premiums are increasing. Now, from what we can understand, aviation underwriters are really hurting from a number of high-profile accident claims last year. And apparently, there's a big ripple effect from the Boeing 737 MAX debacle. Now, just why we in general aviation, flying our Cessnas and Pipers and so on, are being punished for regulatory and corporate mismanagement is a bit of a mystery. And we have to ask if increasing flying club policies by 25% will actually change any of that.
So what can flying clubs do about this?
Well, we've been in contact with a number of insurance companies, one broker and one company that underwrites its own policies. And we had a conversation with leaders at Assured Partners recently, who is an AOPA strategic partner, by the way. We heard the term hardening of the market because of these high-profile claims. They also provided 10 tips to maximize your coverage and minimize your premiums. So here's a quick summary. I know this was on the AOPA website a couple of weeks ago, but it seems to have gone. So I'll see if I can get that put back up on the website. So the first one is pilot to aircraft ratio. They propose setting a maximum of 10 members per aircraft. Now, presumably that just doesn't mean 10 members in the club. If you have two aircraft, then up to 20 members. That, I guess, is what they're talking about there. Age of pilots. Member pilots under the age of 70 will receive more favorable rates. So it's easy then, Drew. We just don't get old, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. So safety seminars. Outline in detail your specific safety seminars and maybe some training that's required or listed in your bylaws. Make sure it's written down. Make sure you adhere to it. Claim-free. Remain claim-free, they say. Well, I don't know. The whole point of insurance is to have insurance in case of claims. And of course, we all want to stay claim free. I think what they're really talking about there is find ways such that you don't get into accidents and therefore don't have to make a claim. Obviously, security, safety, and all of those sorts of things. Have a pilot roster, but they make a really good point here, one that I've not considered. Don't list your non-flying members, your social members. Don't list them on the club roster, particularly the roster that you send up to the insurance company, because the insurance company will look at that. They will see that there's perhaps more than 10 people per airplane. And they also might be surprised to see that some people don't have any or very limited flying. Well, they're social members, so don't include them on your roster. Apparently, equity clubs receive better premiums than non-equity clubs. We'll get into that a little bit later. Then there's safety. Make sure you document anything in terms of the club safety policy. If you do have a safety culture and procedure, make sure you communicate that to the insurance company. And also specific steps you have to control access to the aircraft. Bylaws, well, we keep talking about this, and it's really important that bylaws don't just remain that dusty old document that was written many years ago. Bring the bylaws up to date. We recommend you do a review at least every 2 years and communicate those bylaws, clearly indicating your proficiency requirements, checkout requirements, and so on. Communicate those to the insurance company. Lower cost aircraft. Aircraft hull value significantly changes and increases the amount of the premium. So the lower cost aircraft tend to keep your rates down. But of course, that doesn't mean you should go and sell your airplane and buy a lower cost one. But just be aware that more expensive, more sophisticated aircraft are going to cost more. And that leads us to aircraft type. The cheapest one to insure is going to be a fixed tricycle gear standard airworthiness aircraft. Anything on the fringes is likely to cost more.
We've also been hearing about insurance companies not even quoting clubs. What's that about?
Yeah, this gets interesting really quickly. I've had a couple of conversations with clubs who've been denied coverage or renewals, and there seems to be a couple of tines to this particular fork. Firstly, clubs with specialty equipment, tail draggers, retractables, high performance. I mean, we all know that some aircraft are going to be more than others, so insurance premiums will be higher. But not covering them? There must be more. So I asked one of my insurance contacts who quickly suggested that in these cases, there's usually more than meets the eye. For example, did the club have a recent claim and what type of claim was it? We hear that insurance companies are highly intolerant of claims that involved any of the well-publicized top causes of GA accidents. One of my other AOPA colleagues recently used an interesting phrase. He said unforgivable sin to describe claims caused by, for example, running out of fuel. And I get this. As an instructor and FAST team rep, I spend a huge amount of my time working with both individuals and clubs on these causes of accidents, and yet they still happen. This is a big topic. We'll talk more on that in another broadcast. So secondly, then, non-equity clubs. I just don't get this. We've heard directly from one insurance company who just refuses to write policies for flying clubs that lease rather than own their aircraft. So we challenged them, and the answer was, well, non-equity clubs don't look after their aircraft as well because they don't own it. I just don't get this. We're not talking about a rental car here. We're talking about an airplane and pilots. Of course, they're going to look after it. And we all know that non-equity clubs are fully responsible for the aircraft, the duration of the lease. So why wouldn't they look after it? Also, you know, the FAA has clearly stated that flying clubs may lease aircraft as long as the lease is exclusive to the club, and so giving the club owner-like powers and responsibilities. So I don't see any operational difference between a non-equity club and an equity club. Now, the really good news here, Drew, is that that same company has now listened to our reasoning and they are considering the situation.
That is great news. So as far as individual pilots go, how can they manage their insurance rates?
Well, on April the 3rd this year, Assured Partners published 5 tips for mitigating aviation insurance rate increases. And I believe that is available on their website, Assured Partners website. Make sure you search for Assured Partners Aerospace, because they do a lot of other type of insurance as well. These 5 points, they're sort of similar to the 10 we looked at earlier, but just let's review them again. Pilot training and ratings. Pilots who participate in regular training are less likely to have an accident or incident, and that gets reflected in the insurance rates. So pilots who fly more are more proficient, less accidents, less claims, lower risk. Therefore, good insurance rates can come from that. Pilot proficiency. The more you fly, the more experience you gain. They say make sure you fly over 100 hours per year to show you're not just remaining current. And really, when you think about it, 100 hours is not that much when you're operating complex machinery like aeroplanes. So try to fly absolutely as much as you can. Safety courses, we mentioned this earlier. Make sure you do. You create transcripts from your ASI and WINGS safety courses. Have those transcripts available during your insurance renewal and print out the certificates as well. They're nice to have, but send them off to your insurance company again to show that you take safety seriously. Be prepared for more detailed information requests from insurance companies. They're beginning to dig. So make sure you answer the questions on the renewal form. Pretty much every insurance company will ask you to update your information, number of hours flown, total number of hours, all those sorts of things. So be prepared for that and answer it fully and truthfully. Now, this last one's interesting. Pilots over the age of 60 are strongly advised to start the renewal process early, presumably because we're all slowing down by then. I don't know. But the reason seems to be that there will be a lot more questions. There's more to the process than just fill in the form, pay the money, and you have an insurance policy. So be aware, give some lead time to the renewal process. On the topic of pilot proficiency, we take this one very seriously in the Flying Clubs group. And Drew and I have been working on, I think, a really fun program. It's called Wings for Clubs, where we're going to be rolling out this idea of using the FAA Wings program, pilot proficiency program, as the safety structure and safety culture for flying clubs. We'll be rolling this out soon, so keep your eye out for that.
Yeah, definitely. Steve, what about older pilots? I mean, age is something none of us can control. The clock ticks on, right?
Yeah, we've been hearing about insurance companies not quoting clubs with high numbers of older pilot members, especially and allegedly if those older pilots are flying under basic med. Again, we need to apply a dose of reality here. And as we've seen, that some situations are not quite what they do seem. Is the insurance issue really based on age or basic med, or are there perhaps other underlying factors that we just don't get to hear about? Like, for example, a claim made based on one of those unforgivable sins we talked about earlier. Well, as you'd expect, AOPA is looking closely at this to see if there's any data to support this implication that older pilots and older pilots flying on basic med pose any different risk than older pilots with a Class 3 medical, or even younger pilots operating on basic med for that matter. Rest assured, we'll cover this topic in a lot more detail as it develops.
Steve, you also mentioned your own club, the Westminster Aerobats, went through some insurance challenges recently. What was that all about?
So my club is the Westminster Aerobats Flying Club. And as you'd expect, the Westminster Aerobats Flying Club is based at Frederick, Maryland, not Westminster. There's a story there. We do in fact fly an Aerobat. We have a 1981 Cessna Aerobat 152, which is just so much fun to fly. We recently had a quote for a renewal for our existing carrier that was 44% higher than last year. Now, I've got to be fair here. The aircraft hull value increased significantly due to the new engine. So as I talked about earlier, there's quite a sensitivity to hull value and the overall premium. But even without that, we were looking at around 20% increase in premium prices. But then we had another surprise. Three club members left the club, and all for good reasons. That people just had other things that they needed to do. And they left within the 2 months leading up to the insurance renewal. So now we had the double whammy of increased fixed costs, more expensive insurance, with fewer members. So the dues would have to increase significantly. In fact, it would have been a doubling. That resulted in yet another member of leaving. So suddenly we're in this graveyard spiral of the club membership shedding off because of increased costs. So suddenly we're down to five members. But it turned out that that's what saved us. Working closely with our friends at Assured Partners, we were able to get a policy for the five name pilots, the five remaining name pilots in the club, at a very reasonable rate. The dues did increase a bit, but still manageable. So I took some tips from this experience. Don't just renew your existing policy. Look at the club situation and have a serious conversation with your agent. Typical club policies apparently allow from 5 to 12 members in the club. And that flexibility costs money. If you have 5 members or maybe fewer, talk about a name pilot policy. Operating with 6, 7 or 8 members is probably not going to be very cost effective if the policy is priced at a 12-member club. So really think about that. If you're operating around the 5, 6, or 7 members and you have one of these very flexible policies, then think about going on a recruitment campaign, trying to get the number of members in the club up towards the maximum allowed by the policy. In that way, more people help pay for the fixed costs, which lowers the cost of membership for everyone. Oh, and as we said many, many times before, monthly dues must pay all fixed costs. Don't be tempted to subsidize dues with expected income from flying hours. Right now, we're seeing, you know, a situation where not many people are flying and therefore not much money is coming into the club based upon usage of the airplane. But you still must make sure that your fixed costs are covered. So, Drew, there you are. It's clear this story is far from over, and we'll keep everyone updated as we learn more. So we hope you've all enjoyed, if not appreciated, this particular episode. And we'll see you next time. So it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.